Saudi Arabia to announce a merger with Bahrain. After facing more than a year of constant anti-regime demonstrations, have Bahrain's rulers decided to give up Bahrain to save the Al Khalifas? I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is News Analysis.
Saudi Arabia is planning to give Bahrain internal political autonomy while Riyadh staying in charge of its military affairs. The Saudi monarchy is expected to be playing the role of federal government. Saudi Arabia is also planning to include four other Persian Gulf Cooperation Council members, including Kuwait, Oman, Qatar, and the UAE in the union. The announcement is supposed to be made on Monday during a meeting of the council in Riyadh. Bahrain's leading opposition party has condemned the plan and warned that it will further destabilize the country.
The idea of merging with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia without consulting with the Bahraini people, changing Bahrain from a country to an emirate, and changing its king to an emir would make Bahrain unstable and create crisis in the region.
Saudi Arabia has sent military troops to Bahrain to help Al Khalifa regime suppress anti-regime protests there. More than 80 protesters have been killed, including many who were tortured to death. All the same, anti-regime protests are held almost on a daily basis in defiance of the Saudi-backed crackdown on protests. In the latest act of violence, the regime forces attacked protesters in several villages across the tiny Persian Gulf Kingdom. Some Persian Gulf Cooperation Council states have already rejected the plan of Saudi's ambitions to dominate the oil-rich region. Qatar views the move as Saudi Arabia's way of undermining the Persian Gulf Arab states' bilateral relations and forcing its own agenda. Some experts describe the plan as violation of the Persian Gulf Arab countries' independence and sovereignty.
It will completely rob them of their independence, and it would completely strip any of those countries of their sovereignty. It's highly dangerous, and as I said, it's simply a move by Saudi Arabia, which has the overarching goal, its overriding priority now, is simply to occupy and keep its occupying forces in Bahrain.
Saudi Arabia's call for integration has also been viewed as a preemptive attempt to ease worries that the anti-regime protests that unseated several dictators in the Middle East and North Africa may set further precedents among the Persian Gulf Arab states. But winds of change have already reached Saudi Arabia's doorsteps. Anti-regime protests are held regularly in the country's oil-rich eastern province, despite a deadly regime crackdown since last year.
Well, joining me now, live from Madison, Mr. Kevin Barrett, author and Islamic studies expert, and also with us via Skype from Belfast, Mr. Saeb Shas, a Middle East expert. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to Mr. Saeb Shas in Belfast. Mr. Shas, first of all, how do you perceive this idea of a, quote, closer political union, according to some reports? Is this union, especially when we're speaking about Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, about the two states merging?
This unity is not in the interest of the people of the Bahrain, or if for the wider context, not in the, even the interest of the people of the other Gulf Emirates, but it is in the interest of the feudalist ruling families. The Union planned to destroy the Bahrain revolution and to deny the people of Bahrain the chance of fulfilling their rightful and legitimate demands. Moreover, the Bahraini government has no sovereign decision after Saudi military occupation. It's occupied. Bahrain is gone. It's occupied. What are they proposing with regard to unity between Bahrain and Saudi Arabia is a process of legalizing the annexation of Bahrain to Saudi Arabia. And this model, which is they're talking about, has nothing to do with what is the Bahraini information minister earlier on, to Samira Rajab, said when she said it's following the European Union model. The first step in following the EU model is to take the people's opinion on board, or to consult them, to ask them in a referendum, would they support such a union? Would the Bahraini enjoy to be united and living under the control of the Wahhabi Saudi regime? Or that does not concern them, since the people and their opinion do not matter? I believe there is no white Bahraini would support such occupation or union. It's occupation, actually. And I believe the model of the Bahraini information Mr. Samira Rajab is talking about, or marketing, for its, it follows their partner, the Zionist entity of occupation.
Right, Mr. Shah, so basically you think that this is in the interests of the Bahraini rulers because of the crisis they're facing, but not necessarily in the interest of the other GCC states here. I'd like to just bring in Mr. Kevin Barrett on this. Mr. Barrett, the Bahraini information minister, as was just said there, she said that the union could start with two or three members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. On the other hand, we're seeing already rejections being voiced by some of those member states. Is this primarily, do you think, about a Bahrain-Saudi Arabia union? And this is a move by Saudi Arabia to maybe get the support of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council on this?
Yes, I think the Saudis are trying to keep a lid on protests in the region, and they're trying to strengthen their position in Bahrain, which they already invaded last year. To call this a move on the European Union model is disingenuous. I think this is more along the lines of Hitler's Anschluss, that is, when Hitler's Nazi Germany invaded Austria. The big difference is that the majority of the people in Austria supported that, whereas today the vast majority of people in Bahrain will be horrified to be occupied by and digested into Wahhabi Saudi Arabia. Normally, I think it would be a good thing for countries in the Islamic world to join together according to a sort of European Union model and perhaps have a united currency, the gold dinar being the obvious currency standard. But in this case, I think we're seeing the most regressive countries, the sheikhdoms of the Persian Gulf, that have been oppressing their own people for many decades. Up until very recently, half the people in Saudi Arabia were still illiterate and impoverished. There has been some improvement, but this is not a regime that has the welfare of its own people in mind. This is a regime that's playing ball with the Rothschilds and the world's biggest imperialist financial powers to pillage the region of its oil wealth and to put that money into the petrodollar and into Swiss bank accounts.
So basically,
this is the part
broader
of the Arab world that needs
Saudi
the Arab
Arabia.
Spring uprisings more than any other part.
The broader interests of Saudi Arabia involved here. I'd come back to that, but I'm just being told that joining us now live from Beirut is Mr. Hayyan Haidar. He's also a political analyst. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Haidar. Speaking about the proposal that has been made by Riyadh about, in its words, a union, a close union, a merger with Bahrain, what is this merging, do you think, about? Is Riyadh planning, for instance, to give Bahrain internal political autonomy but stay in charge of the military affairs? We know, of course, already it's sent military forces to help with the crackdown. What kind of, do you think, agreement with Bahrain is Saudi Arabia looking for here?
I think it's a bit early to really define what the details are. I'm sure they themselves, they did not fix what details were there. But it's obvious, can be seen, that the Bahraini went into trouble a year and a few months ago, and the regime called on the Gulf states and especially Saudi Arabia, and they entered militarily, and it seems that now the regime cannot control it anymore. They can see, and there are a lot of organizations, international organizations, condemning the violence and the non-democratic procedures of this regime. So now this is a step forward. And as our colleague on the air was stating, I mean, the basic thing would have been to have a referendum, ask people whether they want this type of union or federation or whatever it is. We've seen last year also an invitation to Jordan and Morocco to join the GCC club, as we can call it. And we know very well that Iraq and Yemen have been longing for years, you know, two decades, some of them now, to enter into this GCC, and they were refused. So it looks more like it's becoming more and more the club of kingdoms and emirates, etc.
But one question, Mr. Haidar, is about the internal conflicts that could be inside the GCC right now. Before I come to that point, I'd just like to bring in Mr. Saeb Shas here on this. Mr. Shas, when we're saying that, well, the Bahraini information minister, you said, has said that the Bahraini regime supports this move, why do you think Bahrain is going ahead with this? Does it believe that it's set to fall and this is the only way? Rather, how far is Bahrain willing to go to get that support from Saudi Arabia?
If we look historically at when Saudi Arabia and Saud were forming their kingdom over Arabia, the peninsula of Arabia, they tried so many times to take Bahrain and to annex it to their kingdom. The English at the time, the English Empire, were using Bahrain as their headquarters for their fleets in that area, and they didn't allow the Saudis to annex it. They tried, and they tried to take the Saudis as part with their Wahhabi invasion as well of and Yemen and some of Emirates as well. But then they stopped in 1915 with the treaty with the English Empire at the time, who allowed the Saudis to form their third state, which is, before that they tried the first state, so also state failed, the second failed. The third one started in 1915, and to leave Bahrain alone, and in that they agreed Al Saud. Today, they don't think Bahrain can sustain the revolution or can deal with the revolution, and that threatened Saudi Arabia as well. So the Saudis decided to invade it. With last year, a few days after the revolution in Bahrain, they invaded. Now they took over and occupied it, and the United States of America blessed that. Even when last week they continued supporting Bahrain by sending arms and and they, but they told the Bahraini they cannot sustain their kingdom, the Americans themselves, as even the headquarters of the Fifth Fleet in there. They couldn't. So they agreed with the Saudis to take over that. So many Arabic Gulf states not happy with that, since these Gulf states are historical feudal families who tried to be independent despite the size of their state.
But Mr. Shas, you just mentioned there the United States. If I could just jump in here, when you say the U.S. resuming its arms sales to Bahrain, you referred there. I'd like to put this case to Kevin Barrett. Mr. Barrett, we were speaking to a Bahraini human rights campaigner earlier on in the program, and he was telling us that it's not just Saudi Arabia. Even Saudi Arabia, because of the crisis that it's facing inside the country itself, it's on shaky grounds itself, and these are orders that he was saying Saudi Arabia is getting from the United States, and that this cannot happen, he was saying, without the United States' consent. What's your view on that?
I'm sure that's correct. The Saudi leadership has been in bed with the U.S. leadership since Franklin D. Roosevelt signed a pact with the King of Saudi Arabia in 1945. And another key moment in this very close relationship was in around 1970, when the U.S. and Saudi elites arranged to take the U.S. dollar off the gold standard and inaugurate the petrodollar backed by Saudi oil sales. Since then, revenue from Saudi oil has been propping up the dominance of the petrodollar in world trade. So these two countries are very closely connected, and it's from a human rights perspective, it's a shame. The United States is always talking about democracy and human rights, and yet Saudi Arabia is one of the worst countries on earth for that. It's a terrible example for the Muslim world. And yet here we have the Americans propping up this brutal dictatorship and encouraging it to invade neighboring Bahrain, where we have an Arab Spring mass movement happening. I think the American people, if they understood what was going on there, would, I hope, stand up and tell their leaders to stop supporting this kind of oppression. It's time for the U.S. needs to allow the countries of the Persian Gulf and the rest of the world a lot more independence. You know, the U.S. has been running an empire since World War II, and it's time for the U.S. to let go of its empire and start dealing with the other countries of the world fairly. And once we do that, I think that the Arab Spring will reach the Persian Gulf.
Right. And now, let's get to the other part of the discussion now with Mr. Hayyan Haydar in Beirut. Mr. Haydar, even if we say that Bahrain is going to go ahead with this plan, what about the other Arab states? Of course, we've been suggesting throughout this show that they're not going to be for it. Will other Arab states of the Persian Gulf region agree to join this confederation? And do you think joining this club would undermine their sovereignty and independence? For instance, the Bahraini information minister, as was said there, described it as an EU-style union. However, we had a Qatari government source in one report suggesting that Qatar sees this as Saudi's way of undermining the Persian Gulf state's bilateral relations and forcing its own agenda.
Yes, I would like to note, first of all, that the U.S. has got its largest base in Bahrain to start with. Second, today was announced that the U.S. will resume providing Bahrain with the arms and weaponry which they had bought last year and which were stopped because of complaints from the international organizations on democracy, etc. So the U.S. They know what's going on over there. Second, I mean, I would like just to ask, what is this democracy when the Ministry of Information tells them that that Bahraini would back such a plan, you know, the merger plan? I mean, they don't have a government, they don't have a parliament, they don't have a referendum, they don't ask the people whether they want it or not. Coming back to your question, you know that the Arabian Peninsula is made mainly of tribes coming from Hadarim, that is Oman and Yemen, and the Hijaz, that is coming from the western Saudi side, and the rest are coming from the eastern and northern part of the peninsula, that is like Bahrain or Iraq or Kuwait, etc. So, of course, these people are not going to just jump on the bandwagon and join this merger like that. You know that Bahrain it used to rely on pearls and agriculture, and then it doesn't rely anymore on this in its economy. It relies 70% of its oil is Saudi oil, so it cannot say no to the Saudis. But this is not the case of Abu Dhabi or Qatar, you know, or Oman even. So it will be much different. You know, the negotiations will have a different way there. And we have seen these conflicting positions in the GCC when they talked about the same currency, you know, to have a common currency for them. So, and going back to the proposal which the GCC made to Jordan and Morocco last year to join there, we can see that the first 20 articles of the within the proposal, out of the first 20 articles, 15 of them were military or security articles, you know. Then
right.
comes
again
the,
a reference to
foreign
the
policies,
disparities you make there between these members of the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council. Mr. Saib Shas, I'd like to bring you in here. What do you think about these disparities? First of all, would you say that Saudi Arabia is actually looking for seeking a dominance over the region by bringing up this confederation issue? Do you think this is about, for instance, the oil and gas sectors in this region, that Saudi Arabia wants to be the federal government, so to speak, and can it do that?
It's King Abdullah told the Gulf leaders in last December that the Gulf Cooperation Council should move from, as he put it, the phase of cooperation to a phase of union within a single entity, he emphasized, which is, to me, that is annexation. He wants to swallow Bahrain and then want to move forward. Many ruling families, as my colleague mentioned, Haider, and the Gulf, does not want such a union. These people are believing their individualistic characters. Such Kuwait position noted a couple of weeks ago, they rejected the single currency proposal of the Gulf state. That is paramount to me. They rejected the single currency. They don't want to be part of it. They don't want to be swallowed. Kuwait is historically, they have their state before Al Saud imposed their will in Arabia. And lots of the Arabic Gulf states, they know for a fact the Saudis, they have been historically trying to swallow them and annex them from the Yemen, from Oman, from Emirates. And the only one who stopped Al Saud, the family, to fulfill its dream to control all Arabia is the English Empire, and now the Americans who are trying to appease this family or that family and using them against each other sometimes. But the days change, and now there is a global game. There is a threat coming from the Bahraini revolution to the eastern province of Saudi Arabia. They want to contain that. They gambled on trying to destabilize Syria, and they will pay the price for that. They want to prepare themselves or hedge for that.
Right.
They gambled against bringing enemies to attack their neighbor, Iran. And they want to hedge as one for that. So they trying. There is a huge amount of security issues here.
Right, Mr. Shahz, if I can stop you here, if I may, because we're running out of time, I'd just like to give the last comments to Kevin Barrett, our guest in the United States. Mr. Barrett, the U.S. has, for decades, we know, been urging the Persian Gulf Arab states to agree to set up, for instance, a shared missile shield, and this is seen as a step towards a joint arms pact, it says, and one that would require basing radar systems, for instance, in one country and missiles in another country. But does the fact that this hasn't happened up until now show that there is a strong inter-Arab feuding, do you think? And is this latest proposal going to intensify that feuding between these states?
Yes, I think that's the question pretty well answered itself correctly. The U.S. is pushing for this kind of so-called cooperation, meaning Saudi dominance, because basically these countries haven't been very effective at setting up powerful modern societies, and so they've basically been colonial outposts of the U.S. empire, which has dominated these countries, but they continue to squabble, and I wouldn't be surprised if this proposal doesn't go very far. Certainly the people of Bahrain are not likely to welcome it, and I think that they'll keep their Arab Spring protest going, and I assume that the world will not look happily upon the Saudi Arabia invading a neighboring country and incorporating it into its own country. This is what Saddam Hussein tried to do to Kuwait, and the world was not terribly happy about it. I think the same kind of result, not exactly the same result, but the same similar lack of success will probably meet this endeavor as well.
In Madison, Kevin Barrett, author and Islamic studies expert, joining us there live. Thank you very much, sir. Big thank you also to our guest in Beirut, Mr. Hayyan Haidar, political analyst, and with us via Skype from Belfast was Mr. Saib Shahz, Middle East expert. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. And thank you, viewers, for staying with News Analysis. Until our next program, from me, Homa Lezghi, and the rest of our team, it's goodbye.